Second hour, Robbie and Rex on Friday edition. PK, Paul Kaharsky in for Robbie. The Stanley family enjoying a little Disney, I think, this week. Ian Safar producing. I wonder if this is, PK, is this an example of like what you're saying earlier? You could say, hey, Treylon Burks, and everybody starts yelling about that. That's the red meat, because there's a lot of people reacting to the Ran thing, including Greg on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHigh.com. It says, when did PK become Stillman? Trevor says, which I thought you'd like. Trevor says, that dude has talked more now than he ever did as GM. That's pretty funny. Another texter says, hearing Rand talk about the Titans is still so weird because he literally got fired for doing the job so poorly, but his attempt to quickly pivot to media coverage seems like a poor attempt to prove to everyone that it doesn't bother him. I think it's probably just getting a job. Yeah, getting a job. And honestly, I do feel like...
But he doesn't need a job. He's got a lot of money pouring.
He's got money coming in for nothing. But maybe this is a pivot for him, huh? I don't know. Some people do this. And I think Rand, I think he'd be probably decent.
I don't.
No?
It's good. You can't go be... This is the same as Belichick, but at least Belichick had super expertise. If you suck with the media in your job... I blame CBS for this. Why would you even think about going to get this guy? Go get a guy who's been good with media. If you're a guy who sucks with media, you insult your own profession by going to hire. Do they know that? They should. Do you research people you're interviewing?
I disagree with you. So here's the thing. The TV good with media, when he gets in front of a press conference, when he talked, could he be? I mean, his opening press conference, was he engaging? Did anybody come? I came away from there and they said, "Nah, that's pretty good." He's
and
good.
From there, he was pathetic.
Well, right. So he wasn't available. But again, wasn't available, and also like again, didn't understand like just some of the stuff you have to do as GM with media. But why would they even know that? They don't know that.
So he doesn't understand what a GM has to do with media, but they're going to have him
but
as
again,
their GM addressing things like what a GM has to do with media
again. How in the world are these people who do the hiring for these jobs, how do they have any idea about that?
Well, my point is, they should. Yeah. I want the media to be better. I want it to be like the EPL coverage, where they would never hire a guy who was this bad at it. Well, they would never, quite frankly.
I'm looking at Mike Tannenbaum. Was he a good GM?
Mike
did some good things.
You know, had a period of being a good GM. I think overall, our media, they just are starstruck, or there's a agent that pushes Mike Tannenbaum really well into that, and doesn't.
I mean, I don't think he's bad on ESPN. He's got some takes. So if that's what you value. I'm just saying, I think Rand is a good talker, and I think he's interesting.
Do you think he's a good talker? Because he speaks calmly and like
I think
a good talker
you have
talks
an issue.
Well and has substance to what he says. Well, what he just said in that one clip we played was nonsensical, was unaware. Now they don't care because they don't understand that.
You're saying unaware because he's oblivious of the fact that like
that the reason there are no chirpers offense is him.
But again, the point is, did he have any sort of. Did he tell a story that was interesting about the whole back and forth of the defense office? I would say he did. You have a problem because he's, you know, responsible for the team and all that stuff. That's not – I'm talking about at-large media in general, talking about the league, going around talking to people. He could be okay.
If he told that story and said all of that stuff and said, and looking back, as I constructed that team – That was something that I didn't pay enough attention to. I didn't match those things up properly. That would be super insightful and really telling. That he doesn't say that tells me this guy's on the moon.
All right, see, we're cutting into time right now to hear like one of the greatest things that's ever been done on the station. But we have a caller. Who's the caller? Sorry, I can't read that.
That's
board,
okay.
Man.
It's Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
You're supposed to read that?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How you doing?
How are you today?
Good. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Hey, I have to agree with PK on this one. You know, Rand could be as engaging as he can be. and everybody could love him in front of the microphone. But unless he has some kind of knowledge on the subject that he's talking about, then I think he's useless.
Okay, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Listen, hate Rand. Rand sucks. Rand blew up the kitchen. Rand took naps on the plane. That's fine. I mean, the guy was in personnel in the NFL for a long time. Like, he knows a little bit about what he, like, this whole, like, he doesn't know a football from his elbow. I mean, let's we're being a little
that.
Bit. Well, okay.
I'm saying that's a bad, unaware clip.
All right. That's fine. We can table this. We can get back into this. But I've been so excited just to play this again because it's so good. So, first of all, you've seen Callahan's speech? Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen this or not.
Oh, really? Okay, so the Titans tweeted out his speech to the team. Oh, man, we almost need to play like, well, no, I guess we're fine. We're fine just playing what you did.
I've gotten the gist of it from what I've heard.
So
this was like his opening.
Again, for one thing,
pump up speech to the team.
He who shall not be named, but you keep bringing him up, you know, the backward hat. I don't care to get into that anymore. It's stupid. But I do. I felt that this speech was kind of forced. And then yesterday it came to me. It's like, okay, he sounds exactly like someone. Who is it he sounds like? Sounds exact. And it actually came to me on the air incredibly. And so just listen to this.
Because I know what we have in this room.
Did you touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off.
I know you touched my drum stick.
Because I believe in what you guys are capable of.
You swear on your mom's life that you didn't touch it then.
The urgency every time we walk in.
I know you touched my drum set, and I want to hear that dirty little mouth admit it.
It should be urgent as sh. We have to make each other better every day we step out.
If you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Where's it from?
You don't know what that is? Oh, my God. Oh, this is so disappointing.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
You've never seen Step Brothers?
Yeah.
John C. Reilly.
Again, I don't memorize film.
No, but you have to memorize film. Listen to the voices. It's the same voice and like forced. It's amazing. Anyway.
May I comment on the backwards hat issue?
Okay.
Just quickly. I guarantee if somebody out there spent some time, they could go find pictures of Belichick in a backwards hat, of Mike Tomlin in a backwards hat, of Sean McVay in a backwards hat at certain times. And then what would your boy say?
I think I agree with you on Tomlin and McVay. Belichick? The point we were talking about yesterday, Belichick wears these sweatshirts that look like they never got washed since 1988.
But that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's stupid. I know. I didn't want to bring it up. I don't want to talk about it more.
I just want to say, when somebody puts that collage together, then how does he spin it? Like, then will he just be quiet about it? What he'll do is he won't say anything. But when somebody puts that collage together, I want to see how he pivots.
You just can't help yourself. Texture says, Ian is a farting legend. I could not agree more. Chip. I mean, again, let the praise come in for Ian on this. It's amazing.
Here's the thing about Callahan right now. If people think we can conclude something about Callahan over the next month.
If we can what?
Conclude something about Callahan over the next month.
Yeah.
You don't get it. We can start to conclude something about Callahan when they start to play meaningful games. None of this offseason stuff. We don't know its effect on this team, and we don't know about him and Cam Ward and the offensive adjustments and these new players' development and any of that until they start playing meaningful football.
Absolutely.
So it's wasteful radio fodder to talk about whether Callahan is qualified or improved or going to be good or going to be bad until you see it. So find another topic.
Yeah, see, now you're getting into the, we don't know what's going to happen, so let's just not talk about anything until the game.
Not anything but that. Well, that's what I'm saying, red meat. Callahan, good or bad, fired or not?
No.
Call.
No. The question and the topic that's on the grid is something that actually kind of comes from a Big Joe and Chase discussion yesterday that I was trolling Big Joe because he was like, well, the difference, they played the Vrabel. You've seen the Vrabel ripping the reporters in New England thing.
Oh, God, it was glorious. Ben Volen.
Yeah. Oh, that was Ben that he ripped? Nice.
I immediately checked on that. Come on.
Well, I knew it was Tom from NBC that he.
Curran.
Yeah, Curran. Okay. So then Big Joe's like, well, that's the difference between someone who played and someone who didn't. So I texted Big Joe. I'm like, well, actually, Brian Callahan did play like high school and college football. Regardless, I was trolling Big Joe. But Big Joe, and I think a lot of people, think that you have to be Vrabel. You have to be Dan Campbell. You have to be that kind of coach to be successful. And that's the topic is, if you had to pick one trait as an NFL head coach that matters the most, because this is tied into the Callahan discussion big time. I mean, like it or not, people are screaming about him. They hate.
You're doing depth here.
Yeah. So what matters the most? If you had to pick one thing, because I kind of feel like there's just basically, if you want to simplify, there's kind of two kinds of head coaches in the NFL, right? There's the leader of men head coach, and there's the egghead offensive guy, right? I mean, it's one of the two.
Well, look,
what do you value?
Well, I'm going Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh was smart and innovative. I like smart and innovative. I don't know that any of the head coaches I've covered, not to insult any of them, but I don't know that the first thing that you say about any of them was, if you're describing their top characteristics, none of them would rank as smart and innovative as their first thing. And some of them have been very good head coach. I think Mike Vrabel's a very good head coach. I don't think his first line is smart and innovative. He is very smart. I don't know that he's innovative.
Yeah, that's one thing about Vrabel that is a little bit misunderstood, I think. But we're gonna see if we can bring in Charles Robinson next. He's on the West Coast. He has promised that he's going to.
It's ridiculous that you asked him.
I said, are you sure? He's like, oh, I mean, he had to cancel on yesterday. So I'm like, well, he did kind of screw us over yesterday, so let's just see. So we're going to try to bring in Charles to this conversation from Yahoo Sports.
What's the thing you want in the coach?
I'm with you. But I also think it's nuanced, so we can get more into that too. Coming right up, Rodney Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Charlotte at First Horizon Park. Pre-game begins at 6:20, first pitch 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Welcome back in to Rodney and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Very excited to welcome on our guest line. He's had a little summer vacay. He's back. I don't even know what camp he is. I just know that Charles Robinson of Yahoo is up for this show at 5:15 in the morning. Now, I don't know. Maybe he's already hit the gym, man. I don't know what's going on with Charles these days. Charles, how are you, and where are you?
I want to know where Robbie Stanley is when I'm up at 5 a.m. on the West Coast.
He's at Disney World right now. He and the family are at Disney World.
Probably on a ride already.
Yeah, that's completely ridiculous. I'm in Vegas right now. I'm on team number one, two. This is team number four for me. So,
oh, wow. So,
Let's see. Chargers. Started off with Chargers. I was there in Dallas when Jerry carpet bombed his roster in his press conference. Rams and then Raiders today. So, already through four.
You know, if you're in Vegas, you should pop over to Big Ten Media Days. That's some of the dumbest crap that I've ever heard from a maybe the dumbest message. I know you don't care about college football.
James Franklin's loving it over there.
James Franklin is like the voice of reason in the Big Ten right now.
Well, aren't they killing? Like, they hate it here, right? Yes. Don't they hate? I read that they hate it in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Franklin ripped the hell out of it. Yes. Which is pretty funny. But, yeah, you can check that out, too. I think it's at the Mandalay Bay, if I'm not mistaken. Just what hotel are you staying in?
Oh, not anywhere near the Strip, man. Come on, I'm as close to the facility as I can possibly get. I'm in like a Fairfield Inn near Henderson. So
good
yeah,
God,
make it sound more.
Can you at
glamorous.
Least get a Spring Fake Hill? It. I mean, Fake you know, jeez. Okay. Well, I appreciate you getting up, man, and we will get into some NFL topics at large. I guess this is a. We just started to talk about this, and of course it relates to Brian Callahan, and of course it relates to his predecessor, right? Because it's kind of like, to me, if you want to simplify, I think you could simplify the NFL, the leader of men head coach and the offensive tactician head coach, right? I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. But the question that I actually asked Charles is if you could pick one trait that matters the most as an NFL head coach, what would that be?
I mean, I told you when you brought this up before, it's completely subjective. It all depends on, you know, what does your roster look like? where are you in the Super Bowl window continuum? Maybe who's your quarterback? But I think, look, like generally, I will tell you that in all the years that I've covered the NFL, if a coach does not have the ability to get players to buy in, that the coach actually knows what he's doing, that have faith in him actually being able to lead a team and be competent, you're dead in the water. Like a good example of this recently, I mean, there's been a few good examples recently, but like Frank Reich in Carolina, it was obvious fast, you know, inside that organization that the team had no faith in him knowing what he was doing. And, you know, I think of Nathaniel Hackett in Denver. Like I remember after he got fired, like talking to people inside the building, and they were like literally in game one after losing to, I think they were on the road in Seattle.
Was that the clock game where he like, I'm like, dude, you can't even count.
Well, and he tried an absurd, I think it was like it was an insane field goal, like 64 yeah. yard field goal. I can't even remember off the top of my head. And like I had a couple of people who were like, you should have been in the locker room afterward. Like you can literally see players who are like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Like he doesn't know how to manage a game. He doesn't understand the analytics end of it. He had no idea that we'd never come close to hitting a field goal this close in Seattle, like, or this far in Seattle. Like it was just, and they were like, you almost felt it go out of the window right then. And then the next couple of games just, you know, verified what players were already thinking about him. So I think, look, if you can't convince your roster that you're competent at the job, you're dead. Like you're, and I think guys pick that up really fast too. Like I'm working on a story on Kevin O'Connell, and I went through the Rams, and one of the things that I think was a big kind of a lie detector for him pretty quickly was when he got in front of Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford had seen frauds. He'd seen coaches who knew what they were doing. Like, you know, you couldn't BS him. Like he was just going to know whether or not you were competent or not. And he knew almost instantly that Kevin O'Connell knew what he was doing, had the confidence, could lead, you know, was, and it took no time at all for Stafford to jump on board, and every other player followed suit. They're like, okay, this guy clearly is legit because Stafford is, you know, knows that the guy's a competent leader. So if you don't have that, I think you're pretty much dead.
I habitually overrate the Chargers. I'm trying to back off of that this year, which may be the year to properly overestimate them. You've been there. What do you think their chances are in that division of actually maybe catching the Chiefs?
Well, you know, it was interesting because the Mike Williams retirement, like on day one of camp, definitely threw them for a loop. Like they were depending on Mike Williams, you know, being a piece, like and not necessarily being, you know, the Mike Williams of years ago pre-injury, you know, but at the very least, they needed an ex who fit the role, you know, had a connection with Herbert, was a true still very high level 50-50 ball guy. And there was no doubt that there was a role on that offense, a fairly prominent role carved out for him. And then he retires. And I think they were completely stunned by it. And they're sitting there and they're going, okay, you know, now what are we going to do? Because we got Quentin Johnston, who we want to turn a corner, but who's still dropping passes. We've got, you know, Trey Harris, the rookie who they're super high on, but again, he's a rookie. And you can't expect every rookie to come in and play like Ladd McConkey. You know, Keandre Lambert Smith's another guy they took in the fifth round that they're real high on. But, you know, just immediately I could see, wow, they're kind of trying to figure out what are they going to do here. Look, the potential's there. Like McConkey, they were super high in McConkey. You know, apparently his weight hasn't really changed, but he's stronger and kind of thicker, bigger. Like he got stronger in the offseason. Which, you know, everyone's being the size that he is, there's and some of the injuries he had at Georgia, sort of like, is this guy going to be able to sustain the role in the offense, which is going to be considerable. And they think his ceiling is higher than it was last year. Like, I think they feel like he could be an all-pro level player with the volume they want to throw at him. can he, you know, remain healthy? And I think they feel pretty good about that way, the way he came in physically. Another position to me that is going to be vital, Mekhi Becton, you know, at right guard. If he can replicate what he did in Philadelphia, you know, next to Joe Alt, the right tackle there, they're going to be very well put together from an offensive line standpoint. You know, Rashawn Slater at left tackle, they got to figure out the left guard center situation. But, you know, you can see that the offense has definitely, you know, an ability to be a big time. Marion Hampton looked great, you know, when I was there. They got bigger on the defensive line. You know, they feel good, but I don't know. You tell me. Like, I one of the things I looked at was, you know, for Harbaugh, I went back and looked at those 49er years where, you know, came, you know, got into the organization, had success right away, took the Super Bowl leap in year two, you know, was a high level team for the next few years. The difference between that team and the Chargers, the defense is nowhere close. I mean, that Niners defense was so dominant. I don't think, hey, they've installed culture. They've stacked talent. There's obviously a ton of belief in Harbaugh after the success in year one, but they just don't have the horses on defense that he had in San Francisco. So, you know, there's still work, I think to do. And, you know, I don't think this is the year that they capture that division, but I think they should at least be on the competitive level where they were last year.
So you mentioned the Cowboys. I think it was Kevin Clark said this week, if you gave Jerry Jones a choice, like you can win three Super Bowls, but you can never do a press conference, he would not take the Super Bowls. Is it that bad?
I mean, I don't know how many at Oxnard, like forever, right? Like that's often where I would start. So I feel like I've been at all of them for years and years. And then I've been there for how many times outside the locker room, you know, after games where he holds impromptu press conferences every single game. And this was the first one. And you know, there's always kind of a jaw wagging quality to his press conferences. He'll always say something crazy. And, but this was the first time where I'm like, I don't remember him just smacking players, like just kind of taking jabs at a bunch of different guys. Like there was no reason, you know, the Micah Parsons thing, he didn't even really need to address it. I mean, he got a ton of questions, but I think the depth, you know, the message was pretty clear early on. Like, you know, hey, there's clearly something wrong in this negotiation right now. I think part of it has to do with the fact they won't talk to David Mulugeta, his agent. You know, there's some complication there. This is dragging. You can address that, but you don't have to go, you know, okay, well, here are the games you missed last year. And by the way, here are the games Dak missed last year. And oh, by the way, you guys always criticize us for not getting ahead on contracts. But geez, we got ahead on Trayvon Diggs and Terrence Steele. How's that looking? Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, how many core players is he basically going to, you know, throw a rock at this point in this press conference? And then, you know, he gets off the podium afterward and he does his like 15 minutes to the side and, you know, he mispronounces David Mulugeta's name, which is, might be a slip of the tongue. But again, you know, this is one of arguably the best agent in the game right now. If not, you know, I mean, there's just certain things that you're like, what is going on here? And then on top of it, you have the typical wandering nature of just his press conferences where you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be deciphering right now. And I feel like, and we've talked about this before on the show, there's some slippage there. You can see he's getting older. Even he admitted he feels like he's on the clock. Like he knows he doesn't have a lot of time left to get something done. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you start out a situation like that. And then you see what's happened since. You know, you got other players that now have to sound off on it. CeeDee Lamb has to talk about kind of a weird beef between Micah and Jerry Jones. And, you know, Micah saying what he's saying about being disappointed. It's that circus atmosphere. And sometimes I think he does it just to keep attention on the Cowboys. And he likes to revel in it. I just don't think this is like the – this circus was not the right circus. Like, typically you could argue that, that there's some method to the madness, not this time.
I want to ask you, Charles, this is one of those, this is a topic that it's like we haven't done a lot on it just because I do think that people's eyes glaze over and it's like, okay, whatever. But just the big picture of all this crap with the NFLPA, what is the ultimate impact of this?
I mean, Lloyd Howell did a lot of crazy stuff in only 2 years on the job.
He got some stuff done.
Lemon
pepper wings at Magic City, man.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny because when I was in Rams camp, I was talking to one of their executives, and he was just kind of telling me, like, he respected Lloyd. Like, Lloyd had come through and, you know, visited all these ownership groups, and, you know, this particular executive with the Rams was very involved with, like, league business and had a lot of exposure to him. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I thought he was good for the union. And he's like, but then, you know, you see all this stuff and it's, we were just kind of laughing. Like, it's a bold move to take the Metro car to, you know, Tootsie's Cabaret and park it outside for 8 hours in the middle of the night. I'm like, yeah. And then expense it. Like,
that's bold.
That's one. Yeah. We've never seen that before. So overall, I can't tell you what's going to happen here because you scraped off your executive director. You scraped off your chief of strategy, J.C. Tretter, who, you know, at least had connectivity to the DeMaurice Smith era, at least understood how things should function. Yeah, he completely – I think you could definitely criticize him for setting up this secret process that ultimately ended up producing Lloyd Howell in that role. But when you take away both of those guys, there's just not a lot of experienced leadership to now set this up moving forward. And I've talked to people who were in the building that no longer are, people who left under Lloyd Howell, and they're even saying they don't know, you know, how this is really ultimately going to pan out. So it's clearly a very, very important moment for the union, particularly given that, look, you're heading for another CBA. I think the NFL is going to want to open up the current CBA to try and get that 18th game in before they negotiate the next CBA, although I'm actually now starting to hear from other people that maybe the league is willing to put the brakes on and not squeeze the 18th game in until they actually do the whole next CBA. But, yeah, I mean, it's a mess, and it's not good. If you're a fan, it's not good from a couple of different standpoints. Number one, do you want to see you don't want to see a work stoppage, right? So that means you want continuity there. You want people to know what they're doing. You know, people who are already starting to incrementally move toward a negotiation, even if it is years off. And then number two, and no one really talks about this, but this one actually I think is pretty important. The player survey, I don't know what they're going to do with that now. And that's been pretty impactful across the league. Like
Tretter's baby, his one good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. George Atala and the ex exec there and JC Tretter, that was their baby. I mean, they created it. They grew it. And then when Atala, you know, left, you know, it put it into Tretter's hands. And now I don't know that there's any, you know, it's early, but I can just tell you, I don't know that there's a big appetite there for anyone to pick up the mantle and carry it, number one. And number two, I don't know the functionalities there because Tretter was handling so much of that and Atala, they were handling so much of that, you know, just themselves. And now when you remove them from the process, at the very least, I will bet you that player report card takes a 1 year pause at minimum, but I think it might go away. I really truly owners hate it.
Yeah,
the union has.
I hate
going.
The idea of that going away. I really do.
I know it, and it's it really. I had told like some of the union membership. I had said like, hey, of all the years I've covered the league, I can tell you I've never seen the union create a tool that has worked so well and so immediately as that report card did the last 3 years. I think it was year two of it. The report card had come out, and I remember Clark Hunt was somewhere in Kansas City.
F-minus?
He's in Kansas City. He's speaking at some event. There's all these media there. It was about this stadium, about, like, you know, working on a new stadium project, whatever. And the report card comes out. And literally in real time, I watched him all of a sudden get confronted about all these grades and how poorly they had scored yet again for the second year in a row. And you could see it really rocked him a little bit. And I'm like, I've never seen the union create anything like this that gets to owners in a way that they actually care about. Woody Johnson's been, you know, on public record saying he hates that survey and just totally ripping it. And now you're talking about this thing that actually worked and made changes that, you know, players should care about. Now it looks like it's probably going to go away because of the ineptitude of what's happened.
Okay, I want to bring it back to the beginning, Charles, the coaching question, because I couldn't, and we did not discuss this, I couldn't agree more. I said this earlier in the show this week. Like, that's the whole thing. Your players need to believe that you're helping them, that you are competent and that you can help them win, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. So I know we've talked about this before, but I mean, it comes up now, obviously, you know, it's year two and all, we know all the different things, timelines, Cam Ward, et cetera, et cetera. But remind me, just around the league, because you mentioned, I mean, for example, Brian Callahan was one of the most lauded coaches, assistant coaches by players, a guy who has the, you know, has the background, all that stuff, terrible first year. Around the league, and just, or even just your perception, is Brian Callahan up to a job like this?
I mean, I have to go look. No one knocked him going in. Like, anyone I spoke to when he got the job, I mean, they thought he was very much worth, you know, that opportunity. And listen, there are good players inside Kansas City that have backed him. Joe Burrow believes in him as a coach. You know, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. You know, I there's a number of players there that believe in him as an offensive mind, as, you know, like that he absolutely can be the high level play caller, that can craft an offense, similar to what was going on with Kansas City, given the right talent. I don't know that that's necessarily changed. I mean, look, of course there have been some things, you know, how he reacted toward Will Levis that was very public and on camera and all those things, you know, that does resonate, where it's like people see that and they're like, geez, like maybe that's not the best way to react to a quarterback in a situation where it's very public, it's very visible, you know, you're going to get asked about it, you know, after the game. I didn't have a problem with it at the time. Obviously, criticism piles on when there's not success that ultimately follows it. I guess my question here is, and I would ask you guys this, is he's been through 1 year, right? You tell me, is Will Levis, now you've seen Will Levis, now we know he wasn't, also now we know he wasn't healthy for a portion of the season, clearly. You're telling me that that's a guy he should have gone out and what, had a Pro Bowl level season with Will Levis at quarterback, the offensive line. I mean, I need to understand why fans are literally tacking every single thing onto Bill Callahan after one season, being exposed to him for one season. If it is a competency thing, fine, but you need to tell me, give me the story, give me the anecdote that shows he has no idea what he's doing. Because I got that with Nathaniel Hackett after 1 year. Do you have that with Bill Callahan? Like,
Brian,
have not heard.
Brian, not Bill, but Bill's here too.
I'm sorry, Brian. Okay. Yeah, Brian. Yeah, Brian Callahan. I have not heard that after 1 year about him. Have you? Like, I'm asking you guys. You're there. You're around it all the time. Is there this anecdote that he just absolutely has no idea what he's doing?
No.
Okay.
He's got he had a bad roster the same way Vrabel had a bad roster his last couple of years, which was his unfortunate undoing.
I think another thing too, that, and I knew this was going to happen once Vrabel got the Patriots job, he was going to be, you know, he wins the podium. Like, he was going to go into New England, they were going to love it. He was going to say, you know, be in your face, and, you know, we've already seen him kind of jousting with reporters and all that, and that all plays, and then and you see all the, you know, you see the clips, and I knew that was going to be bad for Brian Callahan because people are going to go, oh, we had this guy, and
yep,
you know, so
no doubt about it.
All I can say is give, like, let's go through a second season and see. And if it, and if it's a replication of the first season, okay, then we then clearly there's an issue here.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, an absolute trooper for coming on. Appreciate it, buddy. Let us know how you do on the craps tables. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, guys.
Thanks, bro.
Charles Robinson there.
Does he go back to
bed
now?
Great stuff.
He
That's
should.
A good question.
I don't
would.
Know.
I'm going to just keep texting him during the show and make sure he can't. Maybe if his phone, you know. Real quick, I want to let people know this September, Tim McGraw is going to be performing at Trinitix's Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. And we come back a special edition of the Rex Rant, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
John Robinson is the one who screwed everything up for this team right now, and that's why they're so bad.
I would let them pee around the field.
Oh, there you go.
Champ Bailey available this week, or, you know, I mean, we'll figure out whatever we think is best this week, Paul.
I would take Manning blood and drip it around the Titans practice field if I could.
Peyton Manning.
Where's he in terms of knowing everything, Mike?
Everything? I mean, I don't think everybody besides you knows everything.
Any Manning secretions?
Any Manning DNA?
Haircut. If they get a haircut, I would scoop up the hair.
Yeah, it's not Springsteen.
Okay. I mean, you're done interrupting me.
The Manning sperm bank at
I would give him that.
Joe liked that one. It was a layup, Joe.
Man, tell you what, you know, if we could also get together, if we could get together some of the some of the Zoom chats during COVID too, with Vrabel back and forth.
Doing the chat at the same time while he's answering questions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Jabbing us in the chat.
I mean, I used to be like the biggest troll in that thing. I mostly trolled you, but sometimes trolled him too.
No, I really
trolled.
I trolled Andrew. I really liked that one about, I don't know that anybody knows everything outside of you, Paul.
Do you remember when that was?
I don't.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's it. It's the old guy show. It happened sometime in the last decade. We're going to get into, I think the coaching stuff is really interesting. We have more thoughts. There's Lewis Riddick thoughts, too, from yesterday that I thought were really interesting. So we will get back into that. We also have TD at the top of the hour. So we're going to get heavily into the Titans. But today, for the rant, I feel like when we do a show, we basically, it's all it is just ranting, right? We're just ranting and raving. And I think there's a better purpose considering the events of this week. So first of all, PK, I'd like to open the floor to you.
Well, I was late to the news that Aaron Donick was sick. And you just told me that when I was subbing on Tuesday. I sent a very poorly timed text to Willie asking if she'd be up for a text from me, and a few hours later, word came that she had passed away. So I deeply, deeply saddened by the news, and saddened that I did not have a chance throughout all of this to tell her what I'm sure everybody was telling her, but I wish I could have told her just how unique a person I thought she was, how much I loved her, and what a absolute unique individual I thought she was. I think of people I've come across in my life, and I can't think of anyone who was more of a light than Aaron Donick, and her ability to make everyone she came into contact with feel like the most important person and find just something about them. And so just my real short story, and I did not know her well at the time. I didn't know her well overall, but the times I was with her, I certainly felt like I knew her well. I was still kind of a budding radio guy at the other station, just a weekly contributor to Mark and Kevin and Frank's show. And I got an invitation to their Christmas party. And you know how these radio station Christmas parties are. They're a little haphazard, and it's not everybody shows up. I don't know if Frank was there. I was maybe once or twice a week on that show, still kind of making my way. And she was thrilled to see me there, though. But I was kind of laying back. Teresa wasn't there. I didn't have like a home-based person or anything. And I think she kind of took me in as the home-based person. And then when the manager of the station spoke, a couple times he referenced the wake-up zone and those three guys. And at least twice, maybe three times, when he finished mentioning them, she said, "And Paul Kuharsky! And Paul Kuharsky! And Paul Kuharsky!" Just inserting me in there in a way that I did not quite deserve at that time, but really making me feel comfortable and important in that. And I just always remember her for doing that. And boy, did we lose a great one. And in my text exchange with Willie, at such a hard time, I just told him how lucky he was. And he texted me back, yeah, he sure was.
Yeah, and Willie has been amazing through this too. We're gonna play what Willie came with yesterday when he started DVD.
Well, first, bear with me if I stumble a few times here, but first I want to thank you guys for what you guys did yesterday, because you captured her really, really well. So I won't even spend too much time on that part, because the thing I keep thinking about, and you guys mentioned it, is, you know, her, when you're on the radio and in the same city and kind of out in the public a little bit for as long as we've been, your family becomes a little bit of, you know, some secondary characters on the show, especially Aaron. And the impact that she has had, I knew, but when you saw what happened yesterday with all of the responses from so many people, it's like Patrick Mahomes or Connor McDavid or whoever you think the best player is, you know the impact that they're going to have on a game, and yet you're still amazed by it. That was me yesterday. So we're going to miss her, and we're going to keep going. I thought it was just the people that reached out. I just want to thank all of you, because I can't get back. I can't possibly. It was a tsunami. I can't possibly get back to all of you. I've tried to as many of you as I can. Who have reached out directly to me or put something on Facebook or Twitter or any of that stuff. So I thank all of you, whether you're a close friend of mine or just somebody that listens to the show or just somebody that met her one or two times, you know, because you hit it. You didn't have to know her very much to know what she was about and get the vibe. And so that was awesome. And especially, I want to single out a few people that I know have experienced loss, because they know what's ahead for us, and we know it's not going to be easy. But we're surrounded by so much support. It keeps us going. And yet we know that there are challenges we can't see right now in the coming months, years, and all of that. So to those people that are clearing the path and paving the way for us with that, we thank you. And then the last part, I don't know if I can get through this, but the people at Vanderbilt Hospital, the doctors, and all the way down, the nurses, and just everybody that works over there, how they go about it every day. And they see people who are going through tough times and how they stand in there. I never knew. I could never appreciate them enough. But going forward, those are people I'm going to recognize for as long as I'm around. Because those guys, they're awesome. Awesome. So all of you out there that are going through a fight like that, I know you're surrounded by the best people that are out there. And man, I admire the heck out of those guys and girls. And I want to thank them too. So I'm wrapping that up. And guys, let me tell you, like you said, Adam, going forward, you know, I'm going to be a wreck for a while. But like you guys said, I find peace and solace. I love what I do. And so when I'm on the air, I can get my mind. It's like the reason we love sports. We get our mind off of tough things. So I think I'm going to be all right. If I have to step back every now and then, I will. But I just appreciate and love what I do. And I feel very comfortable being here with you guys today and going forward. And I'm just, we feel the love. We do.
That was Willie Donick on Aaron Donick, and we'll be back. Robbie and Rex Show at 102.5, 106.3 The Game.